name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
RandomChatter.com presents a Flash podcast.
You see that red blur?
Dedicated to the discussion of the Flash television series.
A lot to discuss.
Scarlet Velocity.
Run, Barry, run!
Welcome to Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. Thanks for slowing down for a moment. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm General Wade Eiling. I've been tracking Firestorm, but you maniacs, you blew him up. Ah, damn you all to hell.
Wait, what?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
It's just an old friend. So while you hang out with him there, let me just tell you that you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show The Flash, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. But my friend General Eiling there is not available to tell you more about this week's episode. So let's go over to Jay here, and maybe Jay can help us out.
Hey.
So
Yeah, I'm available. That's cool.
Are you available? Good. Yeah, just to ignore the skirmish in the background there. Don't worry about that. We'll clean that mess up later.
Oh, my God. He's, like, flinging General Eiling all over the place. Now he's flinging poo. Oh,
which is which? I'm not sure.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Oh, well, you know, again, there's a slight tease of our furried friend over there.
Wow.
I'm getting a little bit excited to see more of this.
That was a heck of a tease, man.
It is a tease. I can't wait to see
a
whole hour of it instead of just the last, 15 seconds, though.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't want to talk about too much of it right now because I just want to talk about it for the entire podcast here then.
Exactly. So we'll get to the last 15 seconds later on. But all right. So, well, let's talk about this episode overall. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. This is the 14th episode of season one. It's called Fallout, and it originally aired on February 17th of 2015, written by Kato Shimizu and Ben Sokolowski, two writers that we are very familiar with over on Green Justice, our Arrow podcast. They've done a lot of work over there. This episode was directed by Steve Sergic. And let me tell you a little something about it here. So that nuclear explosion. Yeah, I got it. There we go. Last week turned out to be just what the Dr. Stein ordered. Ronnie Raymond and Martin Stein have now been separated, but the ever-imposing General Eiling isn't concerned about silly semantics like that. He's planning on using Firestorm as a military weapon, and he'll torture Dr. Stein to get what he wants. Ronnie and all his friends, of course, down at the Star Labs, are ready to pitch in to rescue him, though. It seems as if they may not be as separated as previously thought. Interesting stuff going on there. But Eiling isn't just some kind of pushover. No. He's made plans for dealing with the Speedster and the Firehead. Meanwhile, Barry's been contemplating the idea that he may have traveled back in time, to the point of his mother's murder and failed. He may have other things to occupy his time, though, because Iris is ready to do some serious digging into the mysteries of Star Labs. What kind of danger are those secrets going to reveal? Josh, I ask you.
Yeah. I think she's she's digging herself into some trouble here, is what I think. But that's down the road. She doesn't have very good influence that's pushing her into these.
Hey, once you write a bunch of stories on The Flash, I thought you hired me for my writing ability. Yeah. And now it's like, hey, go investigate Star Labs. Okay.
Now I'm starting to think that this guy just doesn't want the dangerous missions. But we'll talk about creepy reporter guy.
Yeah.
All right. So last week, like right after the episode of The Flash was on, they released a little teaser, a little preview of Grodd. And it was very Grodd centric.
Yes.
they played it up good. So I got real excited. Didn't think it was going to happen quite like this, quite so soon.
Oh, good. You're teasing it. So, you know, you'll we'll see him in March or something like that. Nope.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. But I, you know, I figured this episode would be very, you know, very Firestorm related and didn't even think they would touch on Grodd or Reverse Flash. And yet we get some exciting appearances of both.
They do stuff like that when they know that they're going to go away for an extended period of time.
Ooh, there
just
you
to
go.
Get
it's
everyone
exciting.
Hyped up to kind of let, you know, it's like a big high and now we're going to coast for 3 weeks until the next episode comes on. So
well,
we
it worked.
3 weeks off.
Worked for me. Yeah, that's right. So that, you know, in that news, there are no new episodes of Flash until March 17th. They're taking 3 weeks off and I don't know. Is this their spring break? Come on, it's a little early for spring break. Is it warm where you are? It's not.
No, sir.
No, it we just got a.
There's a killer
ton
frost
of snow.
Coming in here.
Killer frost.
Yeah, yeah. She's coming in here.
Which, I'd say there's been a Captain Cold came in our area this weekend.
Nice.
So, all right. So that's the news for this week. Is that we don't get to talk about Flash for a little bit.
Yeah, so we'll be back, just after March 17th, whatever that Saturday is after that.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a long wait, but I'll be okay. All right, I'll be okay. So, all right, well, what else? Do you have anything else for us before we start talking about this episode?
Yes, I need to apologize to everybody. I'm sorry. I said last week that 1982 was Firestorm's debut, which was why they had the wine labeled as a 1982 vintage.
Yeah.
I was partially right. 82 was the debut of the longest running Firestorm comic series, The Fury of Firestorm, which then became Firestorm the Nuclear Man. But old Flamehead actually got started in a 5-issue series in 1978. So I must have just misread my database when I was looking up Firestorm comics.
It's not a problem. It's just, you know, everybody makes mistakes. That's You learn from those mistakes, so we're okay with that.
This is going to be my second chance.
That's okay. If we started a new segment for all the mistakes I made each week, I think that would be over half the show. So it's okay. And I'm about to make some more, so let's go ahead and talk about Fallout.
All right,
and
let's get started with those mistakes.
I'll see what I can screw up for us. So.
All right.
So the title of this was Fallout. Let's talk about what the fallout was in this storyline here. It doesn't have to just be in this episode because they were kind of connected. But the last two is kind of like a two episode arc.
I did like the way they connected the previously on the Flash bits directly into the intro of the explosion happening again and. Mm-hmm. Continuing it from there. So, like you said, these two episodes, I mean, they are back-to-back, you know, continue directly from one another.
Yeah. Yeah, the intro title sequence there, like Arrow, they do change that. They use scenes from the previous episodes that kind of lead us into whatever we're doing this week. Mm-hmm. I like that they do that. So,
yeah.
Changes lines a little bit sometimes too. So, all right. So, of course, right at the beginning, the literal fallout from I guess, can you even say nuclear explosion? There was no radiation. So, was it truly a nuclear explosion?
Well, it was. Yeah, I think you could. I don't know that a nuclear explosion has to feature radiation as part of it. It's, I mean, that's a byproduct of, you know, blowing the, what is it, nuclear fission? Fusion? And I think it's...
Something with a
fission. It's fission. It's when you separate something, it's fission.
Okay.
So when you split the atom, there is radiation that's released. So in this case, they were splitting Firestorm apart, but there just was no residual radiation from it. But there was definitely fallout. I mean, there was ash or something like that resembled ash that was falling from the explosion.
Right. Well, and also just what led up, you know, what comes from that separation, you know, before what they'd been together merged for it's been more than a year, right? Or has it?
Yeah,
has
a little
it been
over a year.
A little over a year. Okay, so they've been and they couldn't separate each other. They couldn't do anything. Stein was in charge of Ronnie's body, and Ronnie was not happy about that. Didn't like the path that they took. But now that they have separated, there is different circumstances, I guess, that they can use in their favor. And I would say that is also part of the, I guess, fallout from that explosion.
Well, there was definitely a a disagreement between the two characters, between Stein and Ronnie, in the way that things had been handled over the last year. Stein was resentful of Ronnie, and Ronnie was resentful of Stein, even though I think the two of them, you know, if it had happened any other way, you know, Stein's intellect kept him alive, but I think the fact that he was in a strong body of Ronnie's was also beneficial. They didn't really touch on that in the episode, but I think that's part of it.
I would agree with that too. So, you know, also just mentioning this while we're talking about how they disagree and they don't get along very well, that's very reminiscent of most incarnations of the comic book Firestorm, right? Stein and is his name? It's Ronnie Raymond in the comic book too, isn't it?
Raymond, yeah, same character. Yeah, at that point, there was also Jason Rush, but assistant that we had seen previously. He was a Firestorm later with Ronnie. But yeah, Martin Stein and Ronnie Raymond are the comic counterparts as well.
And they don't always get along in the comics. So
I've just been rereading a bunch of Firestorm this last since Tuesday. And initially, because Martin Stein had been knocked out in this comics, it was a nuclear power plant that exploded. Because he had been unconscious at the time, whenever Firestorm would separate after Ronnie's done whatever, so it was still Ronnie's body. Stein, his mind was, Ronnie could hear him in his head. And at that point, it was basically Stein's subconscious. He could hear everything that was going on. But when they would separate, Stein would not know how he got to where he was, because he had been unconscious when they joined. So every time they separated, it was like he was waking up from being unconscious. So he kept having these blackouts, and then he would start drinking and lose his job and stuff like this because he was so depressed because Ronnie kept needing him. And so that the join, you know, was pretty much a one-sided effort, which led to a lot of disagreement. So yeah, that was what was going on in the comics as well.
All right. Well, I kind of like where they've taken these characters, and it feels very much like the writers or producers are interested in taking them much further, possibly even spinoff series, it feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I mean, this is CW is taking bromance to a whole new level here with these two. But I was talking with my son that how impressed I was that within the first half of the season, their first season, they not only have given us a fully formed Flash, they've given us a fully formed Firestorm as well, which, I mean, two characters for the price of one show that quick. That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they used Flash, if that's even their intention. I mean, I'm sure that's in the back of their mind if it was successful, that they could use that as another jumping off
series.
Point for a new series. Yeah.
But
I think it's been pretty successful. But like I said last week, I am ready to go back to more Flash centered stories.
Yeah. I think we're getting there. I think that's coming.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so in addition to that fallout we had from the explosion and from Stein and from Ronnie there, we saw a little more interaction with Harrison Wells and General Eiling.
Yes.
So there's some deep history there we don't even know all about.
Yeah, we had seen a flashback previously I think it was in Plastique, which would have been episode 5, if I'm not mistaken. And they had not had, they had parted ways previously, some, maybe what, 5 years ago, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
For just disagreements that they were having, but we got to see a little bit more of the.
Well, and it, if I remember right, didn't it had something to do with Grodd, didn't it? Like they were working together on that project or something. I don't know if that's why they separated, but that was something they were working on together. So
at that point, yeah, because there was Wells still had the gorilla in the cage, or the the gorilla in the cage at that point.
Yeah. So okay, they've got this history, so they kind of know each other pretty well. Even more than I had originally thought from the last episode he was on. And they don't like each other at all, clearly. but, man, I was surprised at Wells cooperating with him at all. I mean...
Well, I was initially surprised. Watching the episode again, I feel that Wells is actually playing. He's playing the what do you want to say, the short-sightedness of Eiling in this. Eiling, I think it was when he first comes to him, basically when he comes to him and says, you know, you need to give us Dr. Stein, or you know, we're going to make life difficult for you. He tells Wells that Wells is the smartest man he's ever met, or the smartest man he knows. And I think Wells might take that as a challenge, because it seemed like Wells gave up Stein, but in reality, I think it was really kind of just a setup, because, I mean, from my standpoint, I feel like Wells knew what was going to happen. You know, I don't know. I don't know how he could have known exactly, but, you know, the fact that there's the synergy between the two characters, between Ronnie and Dr. Stein.
Well, maybe he didn't
be able to work this out.
Maybe he didn't know what was going to happen, but he knew that he could take care of it, whatever did happen. Does that make sense?
That might be a better way to look at it.
Yeah. I still am trying to figure out, what exactly was the motivation for Wells to give up Stein to Eiling? What was in it for him? I know you said that he was going to give him a hard time, but
I think he might have taken it as a challenge, right? He said, "You know, smartest man I know." So I felt that plays into Stein, into Wells wanting to prove him right, you know, by saying, "Look, I've given you Stein, but I've also figured out an entire other scenario in which we get him back." That may be one thing. Because, of course, there's a bunch of stuff that, at that point, we don't know what Wells is involved in.
We don't. Well,
you know, so.
And I, you know, I also think, I mean, again, I think Wells believes and is possibly right that he is capable of taking care of Eiling no matter what comes. But Eiling did mention that he knows Barry's secret, you know? So he knows about Barry. So that could be a threat that Wells doesn't want to take a chance on. So,
right. Well, I was also going to add that he knows that the previous relationship that he's had with him, I think he knows that Eiling will just keep coming. So instead of trying to fight him and then having to give up Stein after a battle, might as well just give up Stein right now. And like you said, he knows that either between himself or between he and Barry or the Star Labs team or Firestorm or whatever scenario he's running in his head, there's going to be some way he's going to take care of it. So might as well just give him up right off the bat and avoid a prolonged battle.
So there you go. That takes care of that. Like, you know, he wanted Stein. I gave him Stein. So now I don't have to worry about him pestering me about that anymore, basically.
Right, and so he's going to have forgotten about that, and now I can come at him with, you know, from whatever other direction I want to get everything resolved.
Right, right.
And he may not have been, and Wells may not have been against losing Stein or potentially losing Stein and Ronnie. You know, he's not, for as much compassion as the character has, there are those times when, you know, his primary concern is to protect Barry. He knifed the character back in episode 2 or 3 or whatever it was. So, you know, he's not above getting rid of people.
Come on, that was like week 2, man.
That was great.
Yeah, he you're right. You're absolutely right. He's not above doing whatever he needs to do and taking care of people, which he seems to. Anytime it seems like they are a threat to Barry, and that is what Eiling made clear to Wells that he was. And okay. So that makes sense. So what do you think now? Let's hold off on Grodd for a second. I want to ask you something about Eiling, but we'll hold off on that.
Okay.
Itching to talk about that. Might be the fleas. All right. So also in Fallout news, you got Iris. You have a little Fallout with Iris. What do you think?
I think she's having a little mini Fallout from maybe falling out of love with Barry, or, you know, because of the situation last week with Linda Park, you know, she's feeling some jealous, you know, we were talking about her being jealous and everything like that. Maybe that's creeping in, and which is why she's kind of moving ahead with some of these Star Labs
Investigations.
Yeah.
Do you think she, I was going to ask you about that right now. Do you think that because of the sort of suspicions that her, you know, fellow reporter is brewing up in her, do you think that she's starting to, you know, feel a little bit weird and different about Barry because of that? Because it seems like, well, look, you know, Barry's involved with all these people at Star Lab, with these friends. He's bringing them over now. I mean, do you think that now she's getting a little suspicious? Where do you think she's going to go with that? Is she going to take it very personally like we see some other characters in superhero shows do?
I think there's some of that. Obviously, the more she starts to think about any mysterious goings-on at Star Labs, and that's going to lead her to find out more stuff about Firestorm, which she's already starting to see, which might lead her back to thinking about the Flash and then leading her to think about, wait, Barry's been hanging out with these people a lot. And, you know, he had an accident about a year ago when all this other weird stuff started happening. And I would hope that at that point she can start putting 2 and 4 together. Five and two together. There we go. How about that? That's even a better reference.
Well, that is a good reference. Nice job. I just hope – I don't know how I want them to handle this. It seems like on Arrow, for example, anytime someone gets lied to, they take it very personally. They do not like being lied to in Starling City. They do not like that at all. So far in Central City, everybody's taken it really well.
Wow,
you could, that's cool, you can run fast, awesome, hey, go get me a pizza. he's like the friend you have with a truck, you know, so whenever anybody needs to move, they call you. So anytime you need something done fast, you just call Barry.
the whole, and for me, the weirdest part about Iris's investigation, which I think it's good. I mean, I like seeing her have this, it's kind of like she's got this itch that she can't quite scratch. Mm-hmm. And so she's starting to dig, and it's cool. I mean, it's an interesting character, moment, or function for her to have. It shows her developing some, you know, using her reporter's instincts and stuff like that to go after this.
I feel like the writers have really changed the direction of that character. I don't think she had enough potential as a character when she was just a waitress writing a blog. So I think they kind of progressed her in a way that gave her more opportunities to be more interesting as a character. And it's working. I like her much more as a reporter than I did as a waitress.
I do as well, because it allows her to interface with other characters that can move her storyline along. But
right.
Look at it this way. We've talked about our feelings about the character of Iris on the show, and I've said that I thought that it was a problem with the way that she was written. Not that I don't necessarily, I have nothing against like the actress, but the writing is not a strong, it's not written as a strong female character, I don't believe. And here again, I see an element of that because there's stuff going on with Star Labs, but is Iris the one that discovers this? No. Mason Bridge brings it to her, and he brings it to her, and he brings it to her, and she's like, oh, okay, well, I'll start looking at this. You know, if the writers are trying to show that she is a competent character, shouldn't she be figuring some of this stuff out herself? Now, I think the fact that Bridge puts this stuff in front of her, she is starting to figure stuff out. I mean, she's realized, oh, wait a second, that guy Sam looks a lot like this Burning Man.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she was given the thread by this male character, and now she's going to start pulling it, and then that's going to lead to her, you know, going on and
sure,
doing interesting stuff. But it just seems weird that he brings it in. You know, it's like, why are you bringing this up to her?
I will say, though, in her defense, she wasn't in a position where she would maybe be suspecting something, you know, where, I mean, she's got a relationship with a lot of the people involved in this, and it's always been a genial relationship, and, you know, nothing suspicious necessarily going on. You know, these mm-hmm. people from Star Labs knew Barry because they helped Barry, and, you know, why would you think of anything like that? So I think
right.
they used Mason Bridge, who I agree with you, just seems something just a little bit off about Mason Bridge. You know, why is he kind of
much like I was
things?
Saying with Linda Park last week?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is,
yeah.
Which is weird. And maybe it's just coincidence, but I feel like there's just something about the performance of those two characters who both work at this newspaper. There's something weird going on. I don't know what it is.
I do think they used him to kind of push her, to give her a little bit of a nudge in the direction where they kind of wanted her to go. So now she can be a little bit more independent. Now that she's got the itch for that, I think she's going to be start digging and being, you know, her intuitive self there.
I think it was more than a nudge. And that's just,
yeah,
it was more like
so.
It was like a Danish.
It was a Danish nudgy thingy, yes.
It was a Danish nudge. So
it was a fruit-filled nudge. all right, so.
But like you said, I think she can progress on her own now, which hopefully we'll see. I mean, we've already seen some changes with her, and I like a lot of the stuff they've been doing with her lately. I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see if she figures out who Barry is here. And then she can know and not have told Barry for whatever reason. I think that'll make some interesting dynamics.
Oh, interesting. So you think she'll find out before he knows she finds out? Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I think that would, I think that would serve the characters a little bit better, mm-hmm. having that secrecy. It's like you were saying with the stuff that happens on Arrow, it would be similar to, you know, because then you got to keep it all straight. Who knows whose secret when and, you know, everything like that. So,
yeah. All right. Well, now, like I said, that we are getting, we're establishing some important storylines for Barry and the Flash again, now that we're kind of done with the Firestorm part of it for now. Joe shows him everything that they learned about, from the mirror, from this amazingly accurate holographic mirror device. The mirror's not holographic, but you know what I mean.
Right.
So now we know that we're dealing with time travel.
Yay!
Are you into time travel?
I am very into time travel. Interestingly enough, plug, I started a blog at the beginning of 2015 here just because it was the future year from Back to the Future 2. So I've got a blog at timetravel2015.wordpress.com where I'm reviewing different time travel films, and we'll be covering the stuff that is talked about in this series as well. I put a little blurb up there about The Flash, and as they start doing more stuff with time travel, I will be talking about that as well as other cool time travel movies like Time Bandits and Terminator and Back to the Future.
Excellent. Some of which are mentioned in this show.
Exactly.
Great insights and thoughts and opinions on these movies. So you guys got to check out Jay's blog. It's very entertaining read for sure. So timetravel2015.wordpress.com. All right. So in Flash here, when you deal with time travel, you're wondering what's
the up,
present.
What's down?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm talking about Lost, you know, what time are we in, or what scenario are we in?
Right. Yeah. Cause there are a couple different types of time travel, which I think the show did a great job of,
summing up,
pointing out to the audience. Yeah. So we've got the Terminator time travel scenario where the future appears to be fixed, or at least if you travel into the past to prevent something, you end up being the cause of that thing that you were trying to prevent, and therefore you've been unable to prevent it and you actually caused it, a la Terminator. The second time travel theory that they have is Back to the Future, which is that time is mutable or changeable, and you can actually, if you time travel, you can affect what has occurred in the past or in the future, and change it, which obviously can be very, very dangerous. So what do you think? What's the if given those two scenarios, what do you think we're going to be in the Flash universe here?
Well, unfortunately, I shouldn't say I can't. It doesn't feel as if they would go back and allow him to save his mother. What happens if you do that is you create the paradox, you know, the time travel paradox. Mm-hmm. If he prevents his mother from dying, he basically prevents himself from becoming the Flash. You know, he won't grow up to be a police scientist, and then he won't get struck by lightning, and he won't become the Flash.
Not necessarily.
Right, yeah, right. But I mean, there's a chance.
I could
right?
argue that. Yeah.
Of course, and you know, it could be one of those destiny things where, you know, no matter what happens, he gets struck by lightning, he ends up being somewhere else, and he gets I don't know. But I mean, I'm not sure that they would go that route with him. I think Barry as a character is probably going to have to deal with the fact that he can't change the past and that his mother died. But you know, it's hard to say. That's the scenario that I'm kind of feeling that they're going to go with. What about you? You have a different idea?
Well, I actually, at this point, let me share a piece of feedback we got from one of our readers on Facebook. This is from Sean Johnson. And he started out responding about my weird feelings about Linda Park, mm-hmm. and had a little thing to say about her. But in terms of the stuff we're talking about with Barry here in time travel, he says he doesn't take credit for this. He says there's a theory floating around the webs that after this season, we will have a Flashpoint styled event. Flashpoint was a turning point a few years ago in DC Comics where Barry basically changed the future or changed the past, which affected the present and the future. And they, when they launched their new 52 comic book series, and it's kind of a soft reboot of all the different, comic books and the timeline and stuff like that. So there'd be this Flashpoint styled event due to Barry and Reverse Flash's time traveling where Barry rescues his mom, which results in a parallel / new timeline like J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. In the new timeline, there's no Star Labs team. Caitlin is an icy villain. Sisko is a vibrating hero. And Barry has been on his own without interference from Wells. Still a good hero and maybe more knowledgeable of his powers. And then Barry could be with Iris, since there'd be no friend-slash-bro-zone issues due to Barry not being raised by Joe, due to his mom not dying, due to his dad not going to jail, right? So all this would be explain some of the inconsistencies in certain pop culture references and science, etc. Up to this point, they've been in an altered timeline, and the true timeline is the one where Barry's mom lives. Bam. He says, long-winded and crazy, but it makes sense. So I shared this with a couple friends at work that watched the show, and now we're all very excited to see this play out. Kind of like you said earlier, like Lost, where they could start a second season and it would be it would be the same. We'd be meeting all the same characters again, but now everything's slightly different from what we saw the first time through.
And somehow it all makes sense in a Lost-y kind of way. But
yeah.
Now, that makes sense to me. I do have a – see, and I don't know what my personal philosophy about time travel is. I guess I don't think about it too hard since I don't have to. But it would be a stretch for me to see how they would still have him become the Flash when that event – that kind of pushed him in that direction didn't happen.
Right.
So,
right.
And, you know, they'd have to come up with a real plausible way that he ends up getting struck by lightning again. I don't know.
Right. For me, when I think about time travel, people have asked me because I've started writing this blog, it's like, well, you know, if you could time travel, would you? And I'm like, oh, sure. There's cool stuff that you could go see, but I wouldn't want to go back and you know, like muck with my timeline. I feel that everything that's happened to me has happened for a reason, right? I'm in the place where I am right now, and I also am happy in the place that I am right now. So everything good or bad led me to this place. Now, if I was a completely miserable bastard, I might feel differently about it and want to go back and change something. But I mean, I think time unfolds the way that it unfolds. So, but in this series, I think he is going to be able to go back and save his mom, and just what those ramifications are from that's going to be a really interesting ride.
Yeah, it would definitely change the dynamics of the show. Now, real quick, one more thing on that, though. All right.
Yeah.
Remember last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, I've been mentioning it. Look, Wells is Reverse Flash, or a version of Reverse Flash, or he's got speed, he's got the suit, something. And eventually they're going to discover that he's been betraying them. It looks like maybe soon. Well, in a month, which isn't soon, but.
Right.
And so if they did that, if they followed that scenario where he saved his mom, his dad's not in jail, that gives you another dynamic of the show that they can start working with, you know, and Barry can have this different relationship with his mom and dad because that's all different. And Wells doesn't necessarily have to be in the picture like he's in now.
Well, also Barry would possibly remember everything that has previously happened, right? So he'll have been a kid, grown up, become Flash, gone back in time as a kid, and then supposedly evolves into a new timeline or whatever happens. And he would remember that Wells betrayed him. And so instantly there's this animosity with this character, which didn't exist before.
Yep.
Super.
Which,
villain, you know,
we'll keep going with that, which may cause Wells to not be Reverse Flash in that timeline, but instead cause someone else, maybe Eddie, to be Reverse Flash. Now you got two versions of Reverse Flash from two different timelines.
Whew.
Woo, see, lots to talk about when you talk about time travel.
Oh, yeah, this is once they start doing this and once he goes back, which I think will happen within the last two or three episodes of the season. Mm-hmm. That's my guess. It's our conversations are going to be totally off the wall.
Off the wall, like blood splattered on the wall.
Exactly.
So you mentioned something about the blood sample. I thought it was interesting that Barry put together that in order to have discovered that that was his blood, Joe would have had to have been specifically looking for somebody, right? And so Joe tells him that
we were talking about this last week as to why did Wells not show up, but Barry did show up?
Right. Now, so Wells' blood wasn't there, so supposedly, I guess, well, Wells wasn't there. But so he said that Joe West said that they tested everybody that worked at Star Labs.
Yep, that's what was revealed this week, which is why they were able to figure out that it wasn't Wells, but it was Barry's blood.
Okay,
which is kind of interesting that they've got, I guess they've got Barry's blood on file at Star Labs.
I guess
that would make sense.
Is he an employee now of Star Labs? I guess. Are they paying him?
Well, they've been doing so many, but they've been doing all these tests on him, right? So he would be in their database.
Okay,
why they
would
have everybody else? I don't know.
So
they tested four people.
Well, they probably did like some of the janitors and stuff like that. So, no, but okay. So if they tested people at Star Labs, but not other people that could have possibly been there. Okay, so there's my Eddie theory that I still think he's gonna show up eventually, but they didn't test the police files. They didn't test. Did they specifically just test Star Labs? Is that it?
That's what he said. Yeah. So that's Joe said that's what Cisco had tested what he had requested him test or something like that.
So despite the fact that my Wells is not truly Reverse Flash theory is dwindling down.
It's looking thin, man. I mean, at the very end of the episode. Oh, there's the man in yellow. He's vibrating. Wait a second. Oh, now he's pulling his mask off. Oh, my gosh. Look, it's Wells.
How do you make himself look like Wells?
He vibrates so fast his facial features change.
Yeah.
No, I mean.
It's my theory is about as thin as a poison mist villain.
No, it's not. But again, we're talking about time travel. Just because we see Wells in the Reverse Flash costume in 2015 does not mean that's who stole the tachyon device. Because remember, the man in yellow in episode 9 that stole the tachyon device beat up Wells. So it's not that.
He beat up present day Wells.
He beat up present day Wells, right. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't mean it's the same guy that stole the tachyon device, nor who killed Nora Allen, because somebody could be in that costume later previously.
Well, I do believe that, yes. And I do believe that the Reverse Flash in the past, the day of Nora's murder, in the room was somebody else and not Wells, because they found the other blood and it didn't belong to anybody that they know of.
It's Colonel Mustard in the study with the knife.
Colonel
Bingo.
The man in mustard? The man in the mustard suit?
Yeah.
Kind of is. Okay, so I know. I don't have a good, clear, structured, working theory like Sean did, but I still think it wasn't Wells, and I'm kind of sticking to Eddie right now. And
I still believe you.
I still don't have any reason to believe that it's Eddie, other than the fact that his name is Eddie Thawne. That's all I've got. That's all I've got, man. That's all I got.
Well, the man in yellow didn't touch Eddie in episode 9 when he came in. Like, he knocked out all these other cops, stopped in front of Eddie, paused, and then went around him and into the tachyon.
Didn't
device.
Touch him. He didn't even get knocked down or anything?
No. I think we talked about this, that he didn't get touched. So, I mean, I think there is – what I think is interesting is that there are – again, there are dwindling theories, but there are still elements that point towards both camps, right?
Right. And it could be both.
And it could be both at the same time.
Yep.
So maybe they merge together like Firestorm.
Flashy Storm.
Oh, weird.
Maybe that's what would happen if he touched him. That's why he didn't touch him.
Maybe.
All right, well,
yeah.
Of course, man, there's always going to be these little things, these questions that aren't answered. At least
Time
I hope.
Cop
I
showed that you don't ever, ever, ever touch your other self.
Or your beard, your shaggy beards merge and bad things happen. But all right, well, as we've said several times this season, more time-related speculation to come. Man, I can't believe we got to wait a month. I don't want to wait a month. I'm writing all this out. All right. So at the end, we got to get to this now, right? Okay. So, Wells, I'm going to say Wells
now.
Oh,
Josh, I'm sorry. We're out of time.
Wells in the yellow suit, the Wells in the yellow suit, he takes Eiling across town very quickly, drops him off in the sewer.
Yeah.
Whoa. Brilliant. Brilliant. Now, at first, did you think it was Reverse Flash, or were you thinking that was Barry? Your very first.
I thought it was Barry. It was Barry. I saw the red streak, and now we know that Wells also leaves the red streak behind him when he runs, or the red lightning, or whatever it is. But
don't say he leaves the red streak. That sounds like he's not, you know, he's just not doing the job in the bathroom there. But my first thought was that it was Barry, of course, that got destroyed very quickly. great scene. I don't even know where to start on this. It was a great scene, the way that he presented himself to Eiling. And we heard Grodd.
In his head.
Now, I didn't go back and investigate this, and maybe you know the answer to this off the top of your head. In the comics, Grodd talks.
But he – in some – there are different iterations of Grodd. There's Grodd that was, I'm not sure what's happening, but the new 52 Grodd is from Gorilla City.
And right? He is. Ooh, yeah, man. The new 52 Grodd is a brutal, scary, psychotic gorilla.
and he's huge too.
Yeah. But that's what I was going to ask. Has he always had like the telepathic abilities?
He's had telepathic abilities. Sometimes he's had to wear a helmet for telepathic abilities. And other times he's just been, a smart, like talking, but brutal ape.
Smart, but talking brutal. You got to put the "but brutal." Otherwise you're just talking about grape ape.
I would be talking about Solovar, obviously, the other wise leader from Gorilla City. Thank you very much. But Grape Ape is good too.
Grape Ape.
I want to see Gorilla Grodd riding around on the top of a little van. So anyway, he does not actually talk in that scene, but we hear his voice inside Eiling's head. I thought was a great way to do that. So I'm wondering if they're going to actually have him talk or not, or if it's just going to be all kind of mental.
Who thought that on a show that is as crazy as a guy gets struck by lightning and runs really fast, that they would decide to green light, well, we're going to have this giant mutant gorilla that is telepathic. Okay. So, 14th episode. Here you go.
They're not pulling out the stops, or they are pulling out the stops for the major Flash villains, and Flash has always had.
I mean, and Flash is villains. It's a weird comic, right? I mean, it's very, it's fantastical, in a crazy fun Silver Age kind of way with all of his villains and stuff like this, and. They're just not really shying away from that, which is awesome. They're not trying to make it, you know, gritty and realistic and stuff like that. It's like they're embracing the madness, basically.
And yet they're figuring out a way to explain that madness in a way that makes, you know, relatively accurate sense, you know, in the world. So I kind of been going back and forth whether I actually want to see him talking or just using his telepathic abilities. I think I'd be okay with him talking in a Planet of the Apes kind of a new Planet of the Apes kind of way, you know, where like Caesar does in the last summer's
The Dawn of
the Planet. Yeah, where he was kind of but then he's got the more telepathic abilities where he can communicate more. I don't know. I kind of go back and forth on that.
So. Because he's written all over the walls of the sewer, his name.
Yeah, I don't find it very poetic, but I mean, I guess he can write. I mean,
he's a very good speller.
I don't know. He doesn't really get down the deep emotion of the story when he's writing, but I guess his handwriting's pretty good.
Grodd.
Grodd.
Now, the other thing you said, you know, about how kind of brave it was, I guess, for the producers to already put Grodd in here. We know that they're using CGI in The Flash, clearly. I mean, they use it for a lot of different purposes. But we also know that, look, it's on the CW. It's not the biggest network. Their budget is not what you'd have on say, ABC, where, you know, Disney's got money to kind of throw around a bit. And it's certainly not movie budget. And yet the effects in this are really pretty phenomenal, you know? I mean, they're very believable. There's really only maybe been a couple times when I'm like, oh, yeah, that was maybe not as smooth as some of the other things I've seen. But we haven't seen much of Grodd yet. But what I've seen so far has really worked for me in a realistic way.
Well, they also, I mean, Grodd may be CGI, but they may have also done a little mocap with it, because there actually is a credit. I didn't see it at the end of the episode, but I went and looked at IMDb, and there's a stunt actor that is credited as playing Grodd.
Yeah, man. So, but now motion capture is still CGI, though.
Well, yeah, but. It's assisted CGI, basically.
Sure.
But still, you know, it's like, you know, I think that's better than just doing a straight CGI gorilla, right? Because you got to have somebody, you're thinking, I'm going to have somebody on the set acting the part, and then we're going to, you know, remove them and put a digital gorilla in its place. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was good. That. Now, my question here is Eiling dead?
Yes.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I'm going to go with yes. I'm going out on a limb here, but I think that I don't think we'll be seeing him again.
No, you don't think so, huh?
Did you hear something? Because then I'm going to change my mind.
I did not hear anything. No, no. Okay. But I was actually just what I was thinking is because he's got these telepathic abilities. Maybe he can use Eiling in some way. You know, maybe he's kind of keeping him around to use him. That was the only reason that I thought, well, maybe he's not.
I hadn't thought about that, yeah. Eiling
is so knowledgeable about, you know, Barry and Wells and things that are going on that he could be another future potential threat. Another, you know, another reason why the writers might want to keep him around. So then they didn't show him die.
Maybe. I mean, I would love to see more of Clancy Brown on the show. I'm a fan of his work since Highlander, so that'd be great. But yeah, I think I like what you said, though. I don't know. My initial thought was that he's pretty much outlived his usefulness because, but he still definitely could be a threat if. He's under telepathic control or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, you know, on your side of the fence, there he did know enough about everything going on that it would have been a great opportunity to get rid of him permanently. But
yeah. Now, interesting thing I noticed here, which I hadn't put together before. So when Eiling gets grabbed at Area 27 or whatever it was. The lights were flickering in the barracks, right? The fluorescence.
Oh,
and
uh-huh.
So the lights flicker, and all of a sudden, Wells grabs him, and they race off. And in two episodes ago, when the sewer workers went down into the tunnels and saw the carvings on the wall that said Grodd, the first guy says, power grid's been going haywire in this sector. Electrical disturbances, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which probably points to Wells having been down there prior to this episode. He knows where to go, where Grodd's hanging out. I believe that Wells and Grodd have been communicating because Wells was always very kind to Grodd in the, at least in the flashback that we saw, or in this, in some of the discussions that we had, where in the flashbacks with Wells and Eiling. Eiling also said in this episode that the last time he used one of these cattle prods was on a gorilla, and then he zaps Stein. So obviously, Grodd did not have nice things to you know, say about Eiling in any fashion. So maybe it was something that, I don't know, maybe there was, I don't know, maybe there's something else going on where Wells was like, hey, Grodd, if you do something for me, I'll make sure you get Eiling to play with.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of had the impression that that he'd been down there also. That's why Grodd didn't, you know, pay any attention to him. And probably grabbed Eiling because like I said, he kind of knew he was coming. Interesting. Yeah, I think that... I think Wells, the small flashback that they have shown, it seems like Wells was kind of very sympathetic to Grodd, and Eiling probably wanted to do something that Wells didn't. I'm guessing make him a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which you mentioned, you thought that was the idea last week about why he wanted Firestorm, and that definitely was correct. See, well, you're not wrong so much.
No. Every once in a while I get something kind of right. But... all right, so, man, there's a lot more we could have talked about in this episode for sure, but it's okay. You know, how did Eiling know so much? I'm wondering about that. We may see more about that. I don't know, but that's okay. I will tell you that as far as Martin Stein goes, a couple questions about him that I've just been pondering. Number one, his wife said she didn't want to let him out of his sight. Why didn't she go to Pittsburgh with him? Was there a reason she had to stay?
Have you ever been to Pittsburgh?
Oh, hey-o. No. I have not, no.
Yeah.
Also, it is important to note if you are going to invite Martin Stein over, you may not want to give him any you know, beverage containers that are made out of glass. I think the most deaths in this episode this week would be the, you know, the glass industry. Every time he got lightheaded, he would drop something and break it. But
yeah.
But... all right. Well, man. Okay. So we have a lot to ponder in the next 3 weeks. I am looking forward to getting to some of the meaty stuff here that we're going to see as we really ramp up toward the finale. Because mm-hmm. there's really not that many episodes left, but,
eight episodes left.
No. And you can get in a lot of trouble in 8 episodes. So If you don't believe me, just you know, watch Agent Carter over there on ABC, and you can listen to us talking about those 8 episodes. But there were quite a few little references in this episode. They weren't all comic book references, but there were some pretty good ones. So why don't you start running down those?
Sure, and some of them were really cool little self-referential jokes as well. But there was mentions of Coast City, which in the comics is home of the Green Lantern, specifically Hal Jordan. Also Midway City, which is home of Hawkman and Hawkgirl. Barry points out that Impossible's just another Tuesday for us, which is funny, very meta, because, of course, the show airs on Tuesday nights, so everything is always happening on a Tuesday for them.
They did that on Arrow, but they talked about a Wednesday. I think
they
it was Felicity.
Wednesday. Yeah, Felicity was saying something about every Wednesday was when Oliver uses the salmon ladder or something like that.
Yeah.
And Cisco talks about a guy that they even have a guy downstairs that can turn into mist. And they're like, really? And he's like, yeah, that was like 3 weeks ago, like the third week or something like that, which is funny because it was the third episode of the show. Barry got these spiky things on him, which Cisco said was like a... what was it, like a sea urchin? But it seemed a little more referential. You actually found out it was from Flash number 27. There was a fight that Flash had with Porcupine Man. That's the character's name, Porcupine Man?
I can't remember if that was actually his name. Maybe. They may have just called him that or something. I don't know. But I remember this one. I remember reading this one in college, actually. Running from Myself was the issue. I have it. And I remember when he got all those, it looked just like that. I mean, the cover of the issue looked
quills.
Just like with all the quills sticking out of him. Yeah. It looked very painful.
Oh, that's cool. And then, Firestorm, had completely white eyeballs, just like his character in the comics. There were movie references to Terminator and Back to the Future, as we mentioned before. Also a nice little shout out to Friends. And Game of Thrones, Iris says, to Mason, do you actually know anything about physics? And he says, not a thing. Might as well be in Dothraki, which is the language of the people in Game of Thrones.
It took me a couple times of rewinding that one to figure out what he was saying, and then I realized it.
I love watching with subtitles because it makes it so much easier when they say weird words like that. And then Caitlin was talking to Ronnie about when they captured Captain Boomerang, and Sisko was playing around with one of the boomerangs. So that was another little internal reference there. So again, a lot of cool little shout outs and pop culture references and stuff in there.
For sure. All right. Well, man, we got to run, and that's a lot of running. 3 weeks worth of running here. That ought to put our suits out, I guess.
Yeah. Hopefully, we won't have any, phosphorus burning on us over the next 3 weeks here. So, but if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to visit us on iTunes and leave feedback for us. You can also contact us by email at scarletvelocity@randomchatter.com. Reach us on Twitter at Scarlet Velocity, or visit our Facebook page where we have lots of interesting discussions and are posting news, and we'll be talking about stuff over the next 3 weeks as we hear about it at facebook.com/Scarlet Velocity Podcast.
Hey, and also you can check out our other shows, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which will be coming back with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And you can also check out the last remaining episodes of Agent Carter if you'd like to listen to us talk about that. All of those shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please, please be sure to tell all your friends about it. And remember, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for The Flash can be found at www.cwtv.com. The Flash and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.